It is Saturday, February 14th, 2008. 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, a little bit of last-minute Valentine suggestions from the geeks and more in the week in technology.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks. Al Luckow, he's a new media architect. We have Ben Jaffe, freelance media guy.
Hey.
I think you're a dude more than a guy, but
dude?
I'm not really sure. Yeah.
Freelance sure, I'll be dude. A dude.
Right. He's and, a child.
And cynical Miles Elam, student program and political junkie. Hi, Miles.
Good morning.
He's a child. Wow, that's fighting words. That's going to be one of those shows.
No, it's
huh?
not. It's just an observation.
And I'm in between them, so.
Yeah, they're going to be, you keep them separated, okay?
Can I move now?
Yeah, no. So, hi, Al. I think I'm going to toss it to you first for the geek news. Yeah.
Okay. Just to let everybody know, it's Valentine's Day, and you're just waking up, and you're hearing the radio, and you're going, oh.
Right. Exactly.
Okay, so, you know, basically it's too late. But there are a few things you can still do.
Just, wait, first off,
all
is
hope
anyone,
is lost.
Is anyone
but...
here in that situation? I actually did make a card, thank goodness.
Okay, yeah.
Last weekend. But Miles, you doing okay for Valentine's Day?
I am cooking dinner.
Oh. That's
which, why you... if you know me, that is a big step.
You know you have to go into the kitchen for that, right?
Yeah.
He's been there.
But what happens if you've totally forgotten, like Ben here? He hasn't done anything for Valentine's Day.
Right. Well, there's...
I don't have a Valentine, or not
oh,
a tradition.
It's so sad.
I have friends who have said they'll be my Valentine, but...
All right, you guys, Ben Signal.
Okay.
It's an amazing thing.
I'm Signal? I'm single.
Ben, you can go out and get one of those big packs that you get at school with the little... Just write everybody's name and give it to everybody.
Well, I'm trying to collect as many Even friend Valentines as possible. I'm just kind of embracing it and, you know, running with it.
Well, if you did forget, let's see, what can you do right now? Because you don't have much time, because it's Valentine's Day. So one of the things I think that's really great is, you may or may not have heard about it, it's called Jib Jab. That is a, they've been around a long time. You're able to personalize online greeting cards that are sent. And these are really neat greeting cards because they're most of them are animated. A lot of them you can crop your head. And, you know, your girlfriend or wife or whatever, you can crop their head and you can bring them into the application and it will send, a greeting card to your Valentine with you dancing. You might have seen the dancing elves last year.
Oh, okay, so it's like a flash card thing,
right.
But you get to put your own content in the card.
Right. A lot of them are flash. A lot of them are just static, but you can do that right now. If you
Very
get
cool.
up
okay.
and you know, honey, I'm going to go make the coffee and then just like walk slowly out of the room and then run to your computer,
you can
do it in time.
Okay, here's the problem though. If you're sitting in bed with your sweetie and you're listening to the radio right now, they know too. So have a pretext of having to do something
else. Yeah, there's you're on your own in that case. But there's a lot of these things out there like Jib Jab. I think Jib Jab is one of the best. They've been around a long time.
You know what? Let's make sure we know that these things work. And Ben doesn't have Valentine's today, and Ben's email address is ben@geekspeak.org. That's ben@geekspeak.org.
Yeah, see, it wasn't funny when you did it to me. I have to draw the line, and you're in defense of Ben here. That's not cool, Lyle.
Yeah, that's fun.
Hey,
so
I'm fine with that.
All we're talking about is trying out these services.
Mm-hmm.
Send a little Valentine's.
A geek
Valentine's would be great if you included a geek joke,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah,
and if they're good,
yeah.
we'll post them. And so as Al mentions these services, they're quite good.
Yeah.
We're also listing these services up on our website.
And there's another one for the geeks out there, Nintendo Printable Valentines. It's basically some guy's got these every Valentine's card is Nintendo themed. So you'll see little Nintendo characters and that. And we have that link online as well. You can also do things like I know a lot of the photo services have greeting card things that you can do. Kodak has one, which, you know, you're able to put pictures of, you know, your girlfriend or whatever. So the personalized e-card is what they call these things.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably a good thing for you to do right now if that's where you're at.
And
I
if you
suspect.
Make, yeah. If you make it cute and sweet, Being late on it's not a big deal. I mean, that's my feeling at least.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with the online show of affection. I mean, there's been multiple geeky marriage proposals that have happened in the past. There was a guy who his name was Barry Schwartz, and he was a writer for a search engine roundtable blog, and he created a way that the search engine came up, and when his wife or when his girlfriend searched for her name was Yisha, it came up with a search return that had a picture of the couple next to the message, "Yisha, will you marry me?"
Okay, that's a pretty cool thing to do.
And that's like that's pretty geeky. There's another one that I ran across was a Zanga user. He wrote a version of Bejeweled, which is a little handheld game, so that when his girlfriend reached a certain score, it came up with a picture of a ring and said, you know, "Will you marry me?" That's kind of a neat thing. You're playing your game, and, and you get to a certain score. There's also been
But that's
reports.
A pretty serious hack, right?
I mean, I would think that one is kind of a tricky one to do. There's people that have proposed on Twitter. Another guy convinced the creators of Joy of Tech. I don't know if you ever heard that. It's a comic strip about tech issues. And they created a special comic for him, and actually published it, and had a cliffhanger as the marriage proposal. And that was kind of a neat thing. It's sort of a neat thing. But those are some of the things. Online things have been done for Valentine's for a long time, so you shouldn't feel bad about being able to do it. At least you thought of it. Or at least now that you heard me talking about it, you were reminded to do it. there's a lot of things you can do, and there's all sorts of questions out there about online stuff. It seems real. There's the question of is having an online wife adultery? That is
meaning just a virtual wife.
A virtual wife.
There's like been, in Second Life or something.
Yeah, actually, that's the story that I happen to read. This guy Rick Hoogerstraat, whose name online is Dutch Huber Spiekensbens. He spends more time online with his wife Tenja Jackalope than his real life Sue Hoogerstraat. Rick runs a virtual nightclub, and he just talks all the time. And there's a lot of debate about whether is that really.
I guess it depends on the intimacy.
You can take it a little far if you want, and that I think taking it it's my opinion, but I think it's a little bit much.
And that's a good article that we have linked up right now.
That'll be there too. So,
All right. Thanks, thanks, Al, for
the
last minute Valentine's stuff.
Yeah.
Definitely useful. Miles, I'm going to go to you for the phone, if you don't mind.
Samsung is releasing a phone. This in and of itself isn't so much news. I'm not going to go into Samsung's capabilities per se. But what's interesting about it is the fact that it's being released with a solar panel on the back of it. And it is made from recycled bottles, plastic from recycled bottles,
that's
among
cool.
other aspects.
So it's a green phone, if you will.
Yeah.
And
7-Up, 7-Up bottles.
7-Up bottles.
Yeah.
So
green.
How much the solar panel? How much does that affect the machine? Can you charge completely with that?
Yes, you can charge completely with it.
You just have to plan your day well to have it in the sun for a while.
But it's on the back of the phone, so presumably, one, if you're talking on the phone, it's not going to help. If it's in your pocket, that's not going to help. You would have to have it sitting out on your dashboard or sitting out on your desk.
I'm thinking like a
face down.
I'm thinking like a fedora hat.
You can just
nestle it up on top.
Wear it on your head. Yeah.
Either that, or you could lay on the lawn and you could kind of balance it on your ear, and it'll be facing up. And it'll
I'm
be
wondering,
charging.
Like is that idea. Is the power that comes from that thing enough to sustain it? Like if you've got sunlight, you've got power. Or do you need to charge it? I mean, is it like a 2-to-1 kind of ratio where you have to charge it for 2 hours to get 1 hour?
I don't know if it would be able to help you talk on the phone at the same time, especially because with your hand covering the back as you're holding it, that would be an issue.
Ben said you can lay on the lawn and balance it well.
Right.
It's hard to do with certain phones. It's
but
really
one of the reasons I brought this up was the fact that, yes, it's very cool that we're seeing this new tech. We're seeing the concern about it. We're seeing that the plastic being used is also stuff that it's post-consumer waste, that type of thing.
Yeah.
But I also wonder, is that a better way of doing it as opposed to a separate solar panel that you connect through a cord to charge up your phone? is it better actually on the phone or not, considering the limited surface area?
Well, I mean, in the sense that there's less material being used. Like, you don't have a wire, for example. It makes sense that it would be enclosed. The only issue would be I think it on the phone it makes a lot of sense. You're using the backing. You're using a lot of parts of the phone. You're not doing as much waste.
Oh, no, it actually unfolds. It's 4 feet wide. It unfolds.
It's an upside-down umbrella you got to pop open.
Uh-huh. It's a little awkward, but, you know.
All right, so Samsung's got a pretty greenish phone. So what's the OS that it's running?
I'm not aware. I wasn't looking at that. All right. I'm assuming it's the same as Samsung has always used.
Right. There's a story in the news right now about the metrics on the iPhone and iPod and stuff. And the one thing I heard that was kind of interesting is that the iPhone is now the most popular cell phone in the U.S.
Yes, which is notable because, yes, as a single model, it is more popular than any other. However, it should be kept in mind that the cell phone market is extremely diverse.
Uh-huh.
So if you look at all of Samsung's model phones,
right,
they're beating Apple.
So
if you look
for
at all
a model.
Nokia's phones that are being it. But as a single cell phone model, yeah.
Right. Well, that makes sense, though, because...
Although, I mean, the variations between the 4 gig, the 8 gig, and...
They're calling that all one phone.
Right.
Well, just like you would call one of the one of the Nokia models the same phone, even if it's got multiple revs. But in any case, that's kind of interesting, I guess. Let's go on to other stuff. Ben, I haven't gotten you yet on news, so let's... Do you mind covering the... Well, let me first say that the logo for today's show has to do for Valentine's, kind of. There's this wonderful online service, Al, that you found, which is a church sign generator. You guys everyone's probably seen these images online where you see a church sign and somebody's made a horrible, horrendous mistake on the sign. Well, this website, and it's up on our site, churchsigngenerator.com, allows you to put information in and they generate an image on a church sign. And you can put anything you want in there. So for today's show, that's the image we use, which is kind of cool. And right now you could go ahead and make an image that says something pseudo about your relationship and send it off to your sweetie as a card. So I just thought that was a kind of fun one. Ben, you wanted to cover a story, and I think it's satellites?
Sure. Yeah. So two big satellites collided. It's the first time you have two big communication satellites colliding that are both they're both intact. And so this is a big problem. We've had a space garbage problem for a long time, pretty much ever since we started sending stuff up there. And we don't really have the infrastructure on a lot of these things to bring them back down when we're done with them. And so we've got all of this space garbage orbiting the Earth.
And NASA tracks them, right?
And NASA does track them. But we just had two big satellites collide, and it was 500 miles up over Siberia. It was far enough away from the International Space Station that it's not going to be an issue, or it's going to be a minimal issue. But anyway, I mean, this just kind of puts into perspective how we it's, you know, a big issue that we really need to deal with.
Was it an accident?
I assume so. Only one of them was active. But yeah, I mean, eventually we'll get so much space junk up there unless we do something about it where we won't really be able to send stuff up into space without worrying. And then the other big issue is once you have enough space garbage up there, something collides with something else, and that debris collides with other stuff, and that debris collides with other stuff, and you get a cascading effect. And you have all kinds of little – and, you know, when you're shooting a rocket out to the moon or to Mars or something like that, that rocket's going really fast. So even just a little – piece of, you know, broken glass or metal or something like that is going to be a huge deal.
Yeah, they're called micro comets.
I wonder if it makes a noise up there. I mean, if two satellites crash in space, does anybody hear it?
That would be a no.
I'd say no.
No noise?
Well, unless you're on the spacecraft, yes.
Well, unless you were on the spacecraft and it had an atmosphere.
And somebody next to you.
Well, that's the thing, because slowly over time it's generated. There is an atmosphere.
Because on Battlestar Galactica, all those things blow up and there's flames and an explosion, and I hear it and everything, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I caught up on Battlestar Galactica last
time. And there's no delay between the explosion when you hear the sound.
Right. Not like
I mean, this is just... Wow. Amazing trickery. I don't know how they do it.
So, Ben, tell me, do they have any idea how long this debris is going to stay up there? Like, after the satellites have gone, orbits aren't permanent. Right?
Yeah.
Stuff that goes up there eventually comes down.
Eventually, but it's a really, really long time. I can't
I heard 10,000 years.
10,000 years. Yeah. Oof. Yeah, well, anyway.
So we're kind of – that's a problem.
It's a huge problem, and, you know, we need to start taking responsibility for the stuff we send up into space.
And unfortunately, vacuum cleaners don't work because it's already a vacuum.
And also, I mean, oh God.
Oh, man.
That's, I don't even.
Can't suck it up.
I just completely forgot what I was going to say. That was so bad.
Let's move on. One thing that happened this week was it became public that Steve Wozniak, Woz, is going to be on Dancing with the Stars. And Al, you actually run Woz's site, woz.org.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you posted that story. It was kind of fun to hear it in the news first. And then you've been quoted kind of all over the place about it.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, what do you know about it, just from a perspective? You know, give us a synopsis.
Well, he's on Dancing with the Stars.
And which I've never seen. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it.
Okay.
Have you seen it, Miles?
Any of the geeks seen Dancing with the Stars?
I've seen it, but the only thing I'm interested in is the technical implementation. You know, like how are they lighting
it? Okay, well, let me just
say. Where are the cameras?
Like, I've never seen Dancing with the Stars, and I wasn't going to watch it. Even though I think the last season, it did have somebody that I like, Teller. No, excuse me, Penn, from Penn and Teller. Penn was on at Dancing Stars. He lost. He's kind of a big guy, but he did a lot of training to make it work. And the first thing I thought of was Woz, who's, you know, not the athleticist guy that you know.
He's not exactly Fred Astaire.
Athleticist? No. Good said, man.
He's not from Athletica. Have you ever been there?
All the That's all I'm saying. Shape. He's not from Athletica. Why give me a hard time?
Yeah.
He's not the most athletic guy, but he does play a sport. He plays polo, actually. Mm.
On a Segway.
Segway polo. Yeah. I think the funniest post about this that I read was, do they allow Segways on Dancing with the Stars? Because then he would totally win. But one of the things about Woz that I've noticed, Woz is that one of the creators of the Apple, entire company, but he made the first Apple computer. He's done a lot of stuff in his life, very technical. He's kind of a uber geek. He's definitely an uber geek.
He is the geek in whose shadow all others dwell.
Yeah, he really is. He's a papa geek. That's a good way to think about him. And some people might have seen him on the Colbert Report as the most recent, like, very large public thing, talking about his metal business card, which Al actually designed. But in any case, he got so excited about it that you saw Colbert, who, of course, is this total persona character. He broke character. It kind of threw him. And the reason for this is his amazing ability to be excited about something. And just from a personal note, I think everybody's experienced being a geek to some level. And a lot of people step out of that space. But what I think of as a geek has to do with being very excited about something, wanting to share your excitement, getting over-enthused, if you will, geeking out. And at some point in your life, if you do that, and I think everybody does that at some point, like a five-year-old does that, right? At some point, your peers will tease you, and they will, you know, go and joke about you playing the flute or whatever, and you'll get a little hit and a little burned. And it depends on the type of person, how you handle that, whether you continue to be a geek or not at that point. And Woz is about to do something that is extremely scary, and he will get teased. He's going to go on with professionals, performers, right, because they're all stars, if you will, and he's going to go and dance. And there's this great saying in improvisational theater called go into the fear, I think it is. The basic idea is embrace failure. You can fail at something and still do it. Don't not do something because you're going to fail. And so that's the thing I see about Woz that I admire so much, is that he gets excited about something. He doesn't care what other people think. He just does it. And that enthusiasm and zest for life, that being a geek and doing it anyway, is a really wonderful quality I wish more people had. So I, for one, am actually going to watch Dancing with the Stars, or at least the episodes when I can vote, and I'm going to vote for Woz, and I hope that all other geeks will go ahead and vote for Woz. You don't have to necessarily watch the show. We'll keep an update of some sort. You can actually go to woz.org to figure out the update, but we'll talk a bit about it more on Geeks because we can vote.
Having the courage to do this in front of millions of viewers says something to a lot of us.
I agree.
You know, it's not just a dance show. You know, so we need to stick together and support this guy.
Yeah, Papa Geek.
He's never thrown a touchdown pass. He doesn't sing rap songs. You know, he's never been in movies, but yet there he is.
Let's talk about someone else that's a little more popular. What's going on with Obama?
Well, Barack Obama made waves earlier this year when he was talking about not wanting to give up his BlackBerry, and then it was found that he could keep his BlackBerry and working. But
BlackBerry is a small personal device, like a cell phone. You can do texting.
They're delicious.
Right, also commonly known as crackberries.
Ah, because they're very addictive.
Right. Something that's come up is a CNET reporter or blogger who's pointing out that it is a security risk for him in terms of his personal safety, because something we don't think about very often with regard to these electronic devices is that they know exactly where we are at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't about the data that's being sent.
And therefore the carrier knows where we are, the person that runs the cell phone station.
Right, the data nodes themselves. Actually, it's beyond that,
okay,
but I'll get to that in a moment. The data that we send back and forth, the phone calls, those are all encrypted. That's pretty safe. However, the ID that the phone has when communicating with the cell tower is always in the clear. In other words, that thing that uniquely identifies that particular phone device or, you know, communication device.
Uh-huh. That's in the clear.
Right, which means that anyone who is listening on that frequency can sniff those and see where someone is at that time.
Right. And we talked last week about a service that Google was doing where it kind of finds you, but that was based off of software. What you're talking about is potentially if you were in DC, for example, you could listen to all these different frequencies and nodes, find out which device Obama's BlackBerry was, that ID, and then you would know whenever he was near, within a cell.
Or you'd know where his cell phone was, where his BlackBerry was.
So that's the security risk.
Right.
Okay.
Which I wonder, you know, how much would be mitigated by having multiple ones, if it's getting changed often.
Right, he has 50 of them, and it gets linked to the different ones, and you move it around or something like that.
But it is another dimension that most of us don't think of, and it did bring to mind the issue of anyone can see where we are.
Mm-hmm.
That it does bring in the aspects of surveillance society. I'm not trying to put on a tinfoil hat here. It's just something to think about, something that we don't think about.
And to be, you know, as egotistical as I am, I'm not the leader of the free world, and no one really cares where I am. So,
right.
Well, I can see you right now.
But at the same time,
you do know I'm here, Esther.
One of the things that we differentiated ourselves with the Soviet Union back in the 80s and before was the fact that you didn't need papers to go from one zone to another. You didn't need or you weren't tracked as to where you went. You weren't questioned about it. But today we have the facilities for tracking our citizens much greater than the German Stasi during the height of the Cold War.
Alex, our Southern California geek, is on the thread with us chatting. And he says, yeah, first off, it would have to be local to be sniffed out. But then again, the phone company itself could do it. And what's the security risk there? How many employees can actually look at that data? So theoretically, it wouldn't have to be local. Additionally, cell phone sites are actually not normally owned by like AT&T or something. They're owned by a small company in the area that's bought a whole bunch of area and then leases them the access to them to these other companies. So there's a chain of things going on there. And of course, as you kind of inferred, well, I'll phrase a different way what you were saying. These companies that control this data, and it sounds like I'm going to put on a tinfoil hat, are charters of the U.S. government. They exist because of a contract of the government. So in some sense, they're part of that body. But that's maybe a little too liberal crazy for me to say. But the point is that in the past, a judge, a court could say, hey, give me this data, or an investigator could say, give me this data without even a warrant, and the data was sent out. So the protection levels of the information of where you are, who knows where that is, you know, where, how easy it is to get.
But as I said, this is clear text data of the ID of the phone.
That's what we're talking about, right?
Yeah. So Alex was asking over IM, is this going to include triangulation data? It's not triangulation data. It's just cell towers work on your proximity to it. So as long as you're in that zone, you have the communication line, you can see it. You know that person is somewhere nearby.
It's not like phones have never been hacked before.
And the other thing about it is, isn't it, I mean, I'm not real clear on how cell phone transmission stuff works, but you have to, the cell phone tower has to identify a user, but also not have to make a connection with them, right?
Identify a SIM card.
A SIM card, right. So theoretically, this stuff, if I have an antenna and I say, hey, cell phones in this area, who are you? They would respond with, I'm this ID. I mean, it wouldn't be that. You wouldn't even need a cell tower. You could build your own triangulation system, just carrying towers around with you. You know, four vans and some antennas. You could track somebody.
It would be traceable.
Yeah,
because people would have their calls dropped off if they saw that there was a cell tower of significant strength nearby.
Right, but you'd fail the handshake right away because
that's true.
Those protocols wouldn't work. But you're not actually trying to do that. You're just trying to say, "Hey, are you there?" The person responds, and then the handshake fails. You know the location of the phone. Okay. Well, let's go on. Let's not get too crazy about this. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KSP. We're going to go ahead and invite you to call in if you think your questions and comments are more important than the rest of the news that we have. So I put the onus on you to help control the show flow. Feel free to do it if you got something good to say. Phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877. Ben, was I your first Valentine's card?
Yeah, you were. Lyle sent me, or Lyle wrote a little heart on a paper and said, "Be mine, Ben." And it's really sweet. So he handed that to me.
Don't say I never told you I love you.
Yeah. And then you winked at me. That was a little weird.
That's the analog Valentine's.
It is. Not nearly technical.
That's the sneaker night Valentine's.
Yeah. Ben, go for it.
Sure. Okay. So I have a bit of completely arbitrary, but, completely arbitrary, but still exciting milestone. So yesterday was February 13th. It was a Friday, as I'm sure many of us know. But many of us don't know that yesterday at 11:31 p.m. and 30 seconds, Unix time was equal to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0.
What was that order again? I'm trying to write it down.
Well, okay. Press down the 1 button and then drag your finger all the way to the 0 button on your keyboard.
I got it.
Not the numpad, but on that. Yeah. Anyway, so that's kind of cool. It's completely... Ooh, yeah, you just typed it. You're typing it over and over again. anyway, so yeah, what is Unix time, first of all? Unix time is the number of seconds that have elapsed since midnight UTC of January 1st, 1970. So that's when we start our count.
Referred to as epoch time.
Epoch time.
And 1970 was used just because they needed a date, and that was a good time after the computers, or before computers actually started writing more popular. And the epoch time is used in Unix and Linux derivatives. It's also used on OS, Macintosh's OS. And it's also available pretty much in every computer environment. That ability to find that time is an easy thing to do. And the reason it's so useful is that it's a standard way of saying what my current time is.
Mm-hmm.
And it changes based off of time zone, though most programming environments allow you to manage time zone as well as a separate thing.
Well, that's the advantage. It doesn't say a particular date. It says the number of seconds since a certain time.
UTC.
So it has nothing to do with how you're counting
how we record
it,
things. Right.
Yeah, so it's always going to be the same no matter,
like, doesn't matter.
No matter what time zone you're in.
Right, no matter whether February has 29 days that year or not.
Yeah, and also a couple episodes ago, we covered a leap second, actually, the first episode of the year, I think. And this Unix time does not take into account leap seconds. So,
which makes sense because it does not about us recording time. It's about how many seconds have done.
Exactly. So
it's not about us, the language of time, mm-hmm. meaning it's currently Pacific Standard Time or whatever. In this
with the globe turning and the sun.
Right. It's
and
about
all that.
It's about how many pulses
exactly
relative to Earth's gravitational field.
So currently a day is 86,400 seconds long and 2/1,000ths as well. So it's
there's something else interesting about but go on.
So the quick thing I was going to say is, you know, the 0.002 seconds at the end of that is why we have leap seconds, because we need to measure time in a very specific way. But Unix time does not take that into account. It just continues to tick through whenever we add a leap second. It just counts that as a normal second. So occasionally, you know, a day will be 86,401 seconds with Unix time, just because we've added a leap second for our arbitrary time measurement system that we all usually use. Anyway, but that's
epoch
kind of
time. For me, it was pretty exciting. I Facebooked, I tweeted it. I was excited by it. And
there were parties.
Epoch time. This is this particular milestone.
This particular milestone of it. I know, Miles, when I came in, you know, I wanted to talk about this today. You were like, well, who cares? But it's like a geek New Year's. I mean, that's the kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, especially because you can just type it and click. And I mean, how often can you do that? Just drag your finger across your keyboard and have written the exact
time
to the second.
Miles, come on, be
now. At the same time, I think 2038 will be far more interesting.
Yes, because that's when Unix time will wrap around to a negative number, giving us a time somewhere in the early 1900s. Because it uses a signed 32-bit integer. So once we get to a certain number of seconds, 2 billion and some odd seconds, then we'll exceed the capability of a 32-bit integer's, we'll exceed a 32-bit integer's capability to represent that number, and it'll loop back around to negative 2 billion and whatnot. So
it is for the number that we're talking about, which is the amount of seconds since 1970 started, the date of 2038, that number gets so large that you can no longer hold it in an operating system that's 32-bit or environment
in a value that's 32-bit.
It's very similar to complete equivalency to people writing programs where they talk about a two-digit year, and then 2000 happens, and all of a sudden their two-digit year sets to zero and the math starts breaking.
Yeah, it's another Y2K style situation in 2038.
So but it's in this case,
potentially much more serious.
Exactly, because it's computer language. It's not just our arbitrary, you know, base 10 number system.
Right. In that year, we'll all be going back to using Altair's.
Because they didn't do that.
We'll be, you know, we'll just, well, we have to go back to the beginning of computer, you know, personal computers. And
on the contrary, there are updated versions of Unix time, and many different operating systems now use 64-bit time counters. So this is only for those systems that maintain the 32-bit time counter. So it's the equivalent of, in the year 2000, when that came around, people who were already using four digits for the year weren't unaffected. They didn't care. It was only the ones that spent for two digits. So only those programs that use a 32-digit time, 32-bit sign digit time, in 2038 that are still in use will be an issue. But everyone who is using the newer model, which is 64-bit, which is a much, much bigger number. It's not just twice as big.
We don't have to worry about it, basically.
Yeah, it's 2 billion squared, basically.
Right. It doesn't count the... It's not 2 billion squared?
Oh. Yeah, 32 versus 64-bit.
It's a square larger.
Okay.
Is what
anyway, yeah. So
it's like four quintillion.
No math fights.
What they're doing now is with a 64-bit number is they're counting the milliseconds instead of the seconds.
Oh, okay.
And even so, they're still not going to. So it's going to address the whole leap seconds issue. But even so, it's still not going. The sun will going to burn out before we run out of them. With a 64-bit number.
And then those cell phones won't work anymore with the solar cell phones. That won't work.
So, I mean, to get you an idea of how long that 64-bit epoch time-based thing would last, it is 1,234,636,800... Well, I'm sorry, I'm reading the current time, so that's wrong. It's that 1,2,3,4,5, which is 1,234,000,000, and so on, times itself minus... Or divided by three for the milliseconds versus seconds. And there's your answer.
I lost you there.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things I want to mention is that yesterday I was thinking a lot about large numbers and calculations, and I was realizing that I used to in high school, in a geek in high school, really be into physics, all these different things. But one of the things I remember talking about in math was just geeking out about math, just interesting math problems and issues. And I mean, the standard geek joke that Miles says on Geek Speak. Miles, the geek joke, please.
Bridging the gaps between geeks and
the show's a joke, but no,
the time one,
right?
That why do geeks always get Halloween and Christmas mixed up? That one,
yeah, because
Oct 31 is equal to Dec 25,
which is completely a geek joke. If you get it, then you're a programmer. Congratulations, wonderful.
I've never heard that one before.
Do you get that?
That's
get
really
it,
funny.
Okay,
yeah.
But in any case, I won't describe it because I've done it before. Watch old episodes, but listen to old episodes. The other thing that I was thinking about was February and March, how I like that because February, normally, except for once every 4 years, is divisible by 7, Friday the 13th, yesterday, March is going to have Friday the 13th as well because of that issue. And I've always liked that. All the other months don't do that, right? You have the days of the week does not correspond by month to month. But March and February are tied in that way because of March, February is normally 28 days.
I'd never thought of that.
Yeah, no, that's fun thing. And so I just got kind of excited about that. So like, if you miss the whole experience of being scared on Friday the 13th, which by the way, that's a total social construction, whatever. You can do it again next month, which is nice. I did see Friday the 13th. Really good movie. I liked it a lot. It's the 12th version of Jason killing people. And if you like that kind of thing, you'd like the movie.
Yeah. Is he still killing people?
You know, he is. He's just totally the same. They actually did a recreation.
That's Jason.
They did a recreation.
I think he's
of the
in
first
a rut.
So the next one, will be the 13th.
That's 13th. Right. That's the big thing. Is the next one will be the 13th.
They should probably end it. I think.
On the
and well, it'll be what the fifth well, time that they said this will be the last.
Also,
Friday the 13th
to be clear,
movie.
Though, the other ones were mostly sequels, or he was starred in another movie with somebody else, or whatever. But or you know, it was a visitor in another movie, or there was in space or something, and it was kind of continual. This is actually a remake of the first like two movies.
The remake. They've got 13 of them. There's 12 of them, and they're. At to the point where they're remaking the first ones?
Yeah. No, it wasn't remaking the first one. It was remaking the second and third one.
Well,
right?
it's
ignoring the first
mix of
one. Because the first one,
yeah.
It wasn't... Anyway.
Yeah. You're right.
I don't know what's happening.
I mean, I don't
they
care
do,
about
they do
this.
Have flashbacks to the first one, if you will. But you don't care about
sequels
this.
Need to end somewhere. Land Before Time, I think, is on number 15.
Is there anything I can't geek about? That's the question. All right. Let's find out. Let's invite Doug from Santa Cruz on to Geek Speak. Welcome. What's your question today, Doug?
Hello.
Hi. You're on Geek Speak. Oh, you...
Hi, how are you doing?
Hi, quite well. What's your question today?
Yes. Recently online, I saw a buzz about something coming out in the future in regards to a contact lens that will have, computer chip capability so that you can, visually see things on the contact lens.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering if you had heard about this.
I hadn't heard about a contact lens, but that doesn't actually make a lot of sense because you can't actually see the front of your eye. You see through it. So what normally you do, the things I've heard about being able to image stuff in that way is that you actually draw on the back of the retina with a laser. So you actually have kind of a pinpoint thing that scans your eye and gives you information in. Whether a contact lens would help and do that makes sense. I mean, there's some things that I could see could help a contact lens helping with, but actually putting the information on the lens itself doesn't, it's not the right place for it to go.
I'm always trying to get things out of contact lenses.
Yeah, that was the discussion. The discussion on the blog was that they might have to project it in some way.
Yeah, the projection, and that's been done. I mean, there's been simple projection stuff where you're focusing on the back of the retina, which is kind of what your eye does for you, but instead of your eye doing it, you would actually have a laser slightly away from the eye, which would then focus and draw on there. And it's a pretty functional way of doing it. There's some problems, though, because one of the things that we like to do is move our eyes. And if you move your eyes and you have something being drawn on the back of your retina, it's going to move in such a way that would be very strange. And so it could make you nauseous. A lot of these things kind of, that's one of the problems with it is your body trying to compensate for what you're modifying. And all of a sudden you are, vomiting. There are some great little screens that have been existing for a long time that are, small screens that fit below your eye and, or they're pseudo-transparent. And they're kind of doing that effect. So they're always there, but they have to be very sized for you. You got to wear helmets. This is what fighter pilots use in their helmets.
Right, right. And they also have something, on that same buzz about, where they have tattoos that they can tattoo you in such a way so that you will feel what a movie is projecting in terms of its emotion, so that watching James Bond, you can feel the thrill that he's feeling.
I hadn't heard about that one.
That's legislating
our feelings, through a tattoo.
Right.
These are all really recent news stories. I was just doing a Google search for contact lens screen. And the article I found just came out 5 days ago. So, but yeah, thanks for alerting us to that, because I'm definitely going to read this article.
Share it with us. I'd like to read it too.
I think that story about what you were talking about with Barack Obama and the BlackBerry, I think, is kind of really interesting because, even senators, if senators are walking around with them and they can, be GPS'd, that's kind of, something to think about, right?
No, it's definitely, if you've got a high
target, you
very
know their powerful people.
Yeah, they are. It's true. It wouldn't be technically GPS, but triangulation of cell phone information. Absolutely, it's an issue. And I wonder how the cell phone companies are kind of handling that problem. Yeah. Well, Doug, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Bye. Speaking of body modifications,
How are they handling it? I was under the impression that they were giving wireless wiretaps. That's how they're handling it.
So speaking of body modifications, a couple of the news stories we've covered on Geekspeak in the years that we've been doing it. One was a tattoo that was actually little LCDs that could change. So you inject LCDs in and you've got a computer array that can program them and you basically have a tattoo that you can reprogram. And right off the bat, the geeks were saying, ooh, I'd like a clock, please. So your skin just had a time in it. That'd be kind of cool. The other thing was a body mod that I think was on Make Magazine that someone mentioned it, but I'm not sure. You slice into your finger and you insert a small silicone bead, and inside the small silicone bead is a small magnet. And you then seal up in the finger heels, and now your finger is sensitive to, your touching your finger is sensitive to electromagnetic variations, AC or high frequency, whatever, something you can feel. So you can take your hand against a wall and scan the wall, and you'd feel where the electrical lines were.
And they also found that people who have something like that in one of their hands or something like that will just somehow acquire the sense to just generally know which way is north without being able to I'm feeling my hand being pulled this way as opposed to that way.
The ones that I heard, the magnetic bead is actually vibrating inside of the silicon, therefore you can't get direction from it. And that, but maybe they've changed it since then.
Yeah,
like 2 years ago. If you don't rotate, if you make it long, then you could feel slight tugs. And that's another thing.
Yeah,
about
I
it
just read about a magnet, putting a magnet.
Yeah, your body is the way your neural system works. Your whole system changes all the time and evolves. And if you have a stroke and lose part of your brain power, you'll assess other parts of the brain to do that. But the nerve system works that way too. You actually learn and change the way things work over time, which is kind of cool. So you can modify the body. But and anybody want to have a tattoo that tells you how emotions feel in a movie? I'm thinking no.
I usually have my own emotions in a movie. I don't know. If you're emotionally challenged, maybe you might need
a burning sensation or something. Yeah, but that's what the human experience is, right? Is being empathetic. That's part of it.
You should learn. Like you should learn. You know, I know we're all geeks, but we should learn to have emotions. Miles, do you have a dog?
Yes, I have three actually.
Did he chew on the edge of your computer there?
Yes, they do. Like,
I mean, oh, the edge of the screen is
one
like
in particular.
A dog chewed on it or something.
Oh my god!
Yes, one in particular does. The other two do not.
Huh.
But then he's a puppy, so.
We have available lines right now. Somebody dropped out, unfortunately. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You're welcome to call in. Ben? News? Go for it.
Yeah, I've got a news story. It's about Wikipedia. So Germany has a new Minister of Economic Affairs, and he has a very, very, very long name. And so on Wikipedia, someone jokingly added the name Wilhelm in the middle of his name. And if you should look up the Wilhelm scream. I won't get into it now, but it's kind of funny. Anyway, so that made it this horrendously not long name with the name Wilhelm planted in the middle. So when the press was picking up his name for the news stories about him being appointed, they picked it up from Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. And so tons of, and then, you know, they picked it up from other sources, right, and other sources from them.
And all of a sudden newspapers are printing it, and there's your news source.
Everyone was printing it.
It's like a name virus.
Now, in the meantime, the Wikipedia change was reversed, and it was appended to it a request for proof of the name. And so someone went out and looked up his name on these news stories that had pulled from Wikipedia before the change and verified the change based on
Wikipedia.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I don't know. Kind of.
There should be a name for that. Some kind of virus, like a news name virus, or, I mean, I don't know. Some
self-sourcing virus?
It seems
self-sourcing.
Like, there should be some sort of term to describe that.
Miles, what's going on in I don't know how to pass you this story. Tell me about a fossil that was recently found.
Well,
warning, we are immature. Go on.
No. The oldest human hair has been found, at least the imprint
fossil of it.
Found in a fossil, and it is the fossil of excrement found from an ancient hyena.
So they found this, and they found human hair. So this means this animal was preying on humans or pseudo-humans. How long ago were we talking?
Human hair.
We are.
Maybe they were just eating hair. That's a good point. Yeah. I shouldn't assume.
Somewhere between, we're not sure, but it's been dated so far somewhere between 195,000 to 257,000 years ago.
Does that push back our understanding of how long we've had that kind of hair?
It is by far the oldest hair we've come across.
Okay.
Previous to now, the oldest known human hair was a 9,000-year-old Chilean mummy.
Right.
So this outstrips number two by a long shot.
Normally when you find fossil remains, you find mostly just bone because the sediment that normally grabs the creature still lets the flesh be taken away, if you will. Tar pits are different than that. I think you get some of the flesh still around. But,
right. But fossilized excrement, also known as coprolite, is
a very common fossilization, right?
And is a very useful one because you will find things that normally are not found.
Like hair.
Yeah.
And other things, that's the thing about it, is that if the organism's not digesting it, like small wood products and stuff that maybe not get broken down completely, you can carbon date that stuff. Well, I guess this gets fossilized, so you don't get to carbon date it. But yeah,
it's also too
a very
old for
useful
carbon dating.
Tool. Yeah.
Carbon dating is only useful to 50,000 years. So you would have to use some other type of either radiometric dating or geological dating mechanism.
Right. Well, that's very cool. And of course, the question is, was it really a human? Like, would we recognize them as a human or would we recognize them as
There's the question,
else?
Whether or not it was the beginning of humanity,
mm-hmm.
or if it was just beforehand, or if it was a side branch at the dawn of humanity,
which is
another species, right, that was a sister or cousin species.
Similar,
they're not
to
sure yet. They're still taking a look at it.
Wasn't Cro-Magnon not in our line? No, not correct. What's the other?
Neanderthal?
Neanderthal. Neanderthal wasn't actually in our line, right?
Right.
We're not grandchildren of
Or that's
Neanderthal.
The current
that's
theory.
That's the current theory. So it could be Neanderthal. Possibly.
Neanderthal were all very different. This is someone that looks like someone very close to our
someone's hair that looks like our hair. That's
right.
The thing is that it's not genetic information, right? They just have this physical structure in some other material. Anyway.
Yeah, it's...
Thank you very much.
Right, they have the imprint of it. They can tell...
Hyena poop fossil thing. That was very cool. Thank you very much. Let's... We got another news story. I think, Al, you had one.
Well, actually, you know, you now can get a jetpack.
Okay, that's the best news I've heard.
It works through the water, and it has this big hose that goes into a lake. So you have this, like, you tow around this, some sort of little machine. It's like a little boat that is in the water. It's pretty small. And the hose goes up to your back, and you're propelled into the air using water shooting through the nozzles of the jetpack. And there's some stuff online, video, you know, YouTube-type stuff, that shows people using it. And this, I mean, who doesn't want a jetpack? And this looks like a way that you could, like, be on a jetpack, and if it, like, breaks or something, you know, you fall in the water. But
so this isn't exactly like I'm going to commute with it. It's more of a fun thing, right?
If you're commuting across a lake, it's ideal.
But you actually have a boat that's going with you. That's
well, it looks like it's like it tows its little. It's a real tiny little thing, and it, I think it's kind of underwater a little bit.
Right.
But man, you know, I mean, it's a jetpack.
Well, that's the thing with jetpacks is that you have to have to get forces of that nature. You have to have eject something from the jetpack, right? You've got to send exhaust. That's how everything works. Or you push something behind you. Yeah. Laws of physics.
So this is
the perfect example. You don't have to carry all that water.
And you're always reading about jetpacks and how they have them, but you know, they last like, you know, a couple minutes,
right.
And I always think that's kind of weird. What if you're like really having fun and just kind of lost track of time and
you die?
Yeah. it kills the idea. But this, you know, you're over the water.
Yeah,
it's we should put a link at jetlev.com.
I think you're going to see 5 years from now, it's going to be a very popular sport.
You can buy these things. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's like water skiing, except you're flying.
Right.
So I'm going to be the curmudgeon here and say, is this going to be like jet skis? People consider them really fun, but they're horrible for the environment?
You had to do that. You had to do that, didn't you? You had to call it down on this.
It doesn't look like it does anything except squirt water. But
water is a propulsion mechanism, but it needs some energy source, like some gasoline-powered engine or
something. Old dinosaurs.
That, and it's also sucking up water, so you know who knows if that's great the way they do it or from
or how many fish you're going to suck up per minute kind of thing.
Yeah.
Water's being heated.
Well, it's neat. I mean, I think...
I doubt the water's being heated very much, Miles.
Oh, that's true.
It'd be a waste.
The specific heat on
I think it's very cool.
Yeah.
That sounds like a Junkyard Wars kind of thing.
Yeah.
Next news story. Oh, no, let's take a call. I guess I'm ignoring our listener. They hung up. Okay, moving on.
Now they're ignoring you. See how that feels.
This is from Fallon. I'm not sure. I guess Fallon, California, but listening via podcast or via the stream, I'm sure. Who else do we – what other news stories that I want to cover? We have so many.
I cover something I know not too much about, but just really quickly, Palm has pulled the plug on the Palm OS.
Yeah, that's what we put.
They're going to – I mean, I guess they're going to use – a web-based OS or something in the cloud.
Sounds like a mess.
It sounds like a mess. I have not read the entire article, to be honest. But.
You know, in March, I think we're going to have our portable geek here. Chris Dunphy is going to be here in California.
Oh, nice.
We'll have him come on and talk a bit about that. He knows quite a bit about it, of course. Miles?
So I got a story for you.
Sure.
This has to do with a court case that was handed down from an Ontario Superior Court. So this is a Canada decision, not a U.S. decision, but it does bring into mind the difference between how the legal system works and how we think of the world as geeks. So what this came up as was IP address. They were trying to do a sting on a bunch of people trading in child pornography. And so the police simply went to their ISP and said, give us the username, all the information for this IP address that came and hit the site. That mm-hmm. we saw you track these IP addresses and tell us where they are. And so the defense was saying, wait, this is private information. You should be asking for a warrant for this, not right. just going to an ISP and saying, where does this person live? The court decision came back saying, no. This is not private information. This is standard information like you would have an address that you could find in the phone book and therefore not private, not protected.
Interesting. But of course, that IP address is tagging everything you do online. I mean, every other site that you visit, that IP address gets recorded. So
right. Another interesting thing about the decision.
So in that sense,
what
it's not like an address, because when I go to a grocery store and buy something, unless I'm using a club card or something, they don't know where I live, even though I visited them. So right. It's different information than where.
But the decision was also saying that people shouldn't don't, because it is this public biopic information, mm-hmm. that it isn't bound by the rules of privacy. There isn't any expectation of privacy. And yet, I bet if you queried the vast majority of the population that went browsing, that one, if they've heard of an IP address, they wouldn't think of that as being public information. I mean, imagine if any business, just by going to their website, now knew where you lived.
Yeah,
could
that's,
just
that's
get that
serious.
Information from the ISP, because it's not private.
Right. Thank you very much, Miles. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, and KBDH San Otto. We're streaming live and podcasting at kosp.org. The geeks today, Miles Elam, Al Luckow, and Ben Jaffe. My name's Lyle Troxell. Geeks, I want to thank you for being here, for doing all this great news. We have a lot more news that we didn't cover. It'll be posted up on our website. Geek Speaks is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. Yes?
I still don't have any Valentines in my email.
Ben@geekspeak.org. He's not...
I'll send you one, Ben.
Yeah, I'll send you one, too, once I get off the show.
I'll get the email from the geeks.
For KOSP and Geek Speak, I'm Lyle Troxell. We'll see you next week.